Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome to the Great Awakening Show. I am Joanne, Divine Life Yogini, and on this week's show, we have Fiona Price. For 40 years, Fiona was a serial entrepreneur, and in 1988, she set up a business helping women understand money management and empowering them to build their financial independence. She became a media spokesperson and a catalyst in the business women's networking movement, which was in its early stages at this time. Fiona was listed in the top 100 of power and influencers in the financial sector. Then it was time for a change and she metamorphosized from city professional to semi-feral, living reclusively in Wales with her animals on an ancient farmstead. For the last couple of years, Fiona has been gestating her new project, the Earth Collective, which is a self-sufficient eco-community she is planning to establish in Ireland. She also wrote a book last year called The Ultimate Relationship, The One You Have With Yourself.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Fiona, welcome to the Great Awakening Show.
Thank you.
It's lovely to have you here. So, Fiona, this is, you know, I believe one of the greatest times to be alive, you know, from what we're all going through. What does this Great Awakening humanity is going through? What does it mean for you and us all?
Well, phew, that is a big conversation. I think this is the point at which we are recreating our world. This is the point at which we say we don't want any more of what we've had with all of the everything that's been going on, which has really highlighted the dysfunction. So this is the point that we recreate something that we prefer to live in. But actually, it's been happening for a long time. I mean, when you think about the Mayan calendar that took us up to 2012, that was the end of a 25,000 year cycle. So the prophecy was the end of times, but actually it just meant the end of a phase. And that had a window of opportunity, that had a transitional period of 30 years, so 18 years or so before 2012, and then another after that. And it started, I think, with the collapse of the Berlin Wall. So this isn't something that's just happened like that overnight. This has been a transitional phase, which is the end of not just that, you know, it's the end of hundreds, if not thousands, of years of darkness and dysfunction. And this last pinnacle that has turned us to the point that we are now has been part of this 30-year cycle, which ends in 2030. So we have this amazing opportunity now with so many people saying, what sort of a world do we really want to live in? That the wind is behind our back in terms of making these things happen, especially over the next 7 years. So, you know, it's an enhanced energy. It's an accelerated energy over this sort of window of opportunity, this 30-year transitional period. So, yeah, I mean, it's amazing to look around and see what's going on. There are so many people that are getting together, and getting together again is the energy of our times. It's the Aquarian energy, you know. So many of us have gone through a sort of really dark night of the soul, a reclusive period, a period of sort of feeling like we're in the cave, reinventing ourselves and reinventing our lives. And it's just now that it feels like now is the time for action. You know, now is the time to get together with like-minded people and do whatever projects call us. You know, my project that I'm doing, which is a way of living collectively, is different to your project and the next project. Yes. But the idea is that there is a coherence and a power in bringing like-minded people together for whatever project. And so again, that is an opportunity that probably hasn't been around for an awful long time, and aligns with the cosmic changes that are happening and the whole astrology of our times. So yeah, the Great Awakening is a time that, like no other in our whole history, gives us the opportunity to move into an era of consciousness development, and to move away from the constant question about whether we're going to destroy ourselves, and the constant uncertainty of that whole sort of that whole phase. Now, for me, it feels like it's absolutely certain whatever noise is happening, you know, the system's falling apart. It will take time. We have to now step up and say, okay, what we have control over is what we do individually and in our lives collectively on the ground. Change is never going to come from the top down because it's broken. The system is broken everywhere, exactly. Globally. Yes. So the power yes. now is with the people. The power now is with the individuals to say, how will we do it differently? And just do it.
Yes, that is so absolutely true. And it's so important. I call this time unity consciousness and love awareness, right? Because it's us, our brothers and sisters, all of humanity coming around the world and building the new, walking away from their old system, if we walk away from that, that's going to collapse, you know, and if we're in it, we're propping it up, right? So we've got to walk away, just turn away, don't fight it, you know, just turn away and build the new. And eventually their old systems will crumble anyway, you know. So, and this is all about, I mean, I've done so many videos with these wonderful, you know, prepare for change and the Sisters of the Rose that have, you know, global outreach. They are in every single country and they are bringing change and they are helping, you know, to bring the goddess light back in for the women to rise up. And it's just amazing what is happening. You know, so many conscious communities are springing up all over the world. So many different ways of living, new ways of living out of the system, you know, are coming in. And it's just, and therefore we don't just like, it's not like we're going to come away and just form our little societies and not be, you know, be alone. No. We form our societies and our conscious communities, but we do it and we have outreach with each other. You know, we go on each other's websites, you know, it's like, that's how we do it. Do you know what I mean? You can't just cut yourself off. I don't believe it's got to be a unity consciousness, isn't it?
And I'm seeing that in a very different way on the ground in Ireland. So I've moved to Ireland to do my project, which I know we're going to talk about later, but I came 4.5 months ago and I knew no one. I started yet again with that proverbial blank sheet of paper and asked the first question. And I knew that in this part of Ireland, there would be like-minded people, but I didn't know how to find them. I didn't know where they were. And through the most incredible synchronicity, because I take responsibility for my own reality and I create my own synchronicity, I have now tapped into a rich seam of my tribe in a way that I haven't actually experienced before, except perhaps when I was starting out in London in the 80s, and that was frenetic and expansive. But I have found so many people now who have the same outlook on life, who know what's going on in the world, who are all looking to create something different. And many of these people, and so my idea was always the community I set up is not enough to be isolated. It has to be a community within a community.
Yes.
Because you need in the wider context to be talking about alternative financial systems. You need in the wider context to be trading with each other. Mm. And so there's so much actually going on the ground that isn't publicized, that doesn't have platforms on purpose, in order that without very quietly and without creating a situation for conflict, people are just getting on and doing it. So there are people that are renting ground and creating community vegetable gardens. There are people that are sharing all sorts of ideas for enhancing the production of food and harnessing the power of water. There are people that are homesteading. There are people that are off-gridding. And so actually, and sharing the wealth of knowledge, because I really believe that in the next few years, we're going to have so much tech coming on stream that is the zero point stuff, i.e. free energy, the stuff that's been kept from us for 100 years and more, since the time of Tesla and beyond, in fact.
I know. It was so sad that Tesla, we didn't go with Tesla, because if we did, we would all have free energy. You know, what a shame.
But it's happening. It's happening now because, you know, the deep state has been using it nefariously for all of this time.
Yeah.
But now, with the system crumbling and so many people having the inspiration to create their versions of. There are a multitude of different tech ideas being developed in people's garages, in laboratories, and actually, because the system is crumbling, it cannot continue to suppress the people and the ideas. So yes. I actually feel there's going to be a huge amount coming out. But even on the ground, what I'm seeing are different ideas and the start of things that people are doing on their own properties and in mm-hmm. their own way. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's this unity consciousness thing. I think it's this community thing. Mm. I think that there are so many different tiers of it, from the invisible that's happening on the ground that will create a groundswell and crescendo into something that becomes visible in due course, but then also the platforms like yours and mine to actually discuss things and to put out information to a global community to enhance that unity consciousness that we all share what we know and our wisdom with everyone. We make it open source. Yes. So with my project and you know, without talking about that right now, one of the things that's super important is that is an open resource, that it will be filmed, it will be blogged, so that what I learn about all the things that I'm going to be involved in to live off grid and to create this sort of different way of living will be shared. Yes. So that people who want to do something similar can take bits and pieces and not have to start with that blank sheet of paper.
Yes, that's exactly. That's what I'm going to do as well. We're just the same. It's really funny. But also, with this tech that's coming in, I believe the Great Mother, she's called us back. We're going to be living at one more with nature. So we're going to have amazing tech because they have kept it from us, haven't they? You know, but we're going to mix it and be one and come back and have that natural way, simple way, you know, of living, natural medicines, you know, free energy, you know, frequency medicine. It's, you know, coming back to Mother Earth. I really truly believe that this is what's going to happen in this Great Awakening.
I'm with you 100%. And it's vital, and it cannot not be, because that's where the healing of the planet is going to come in. And also, that is where secrets are going to be revealed of healing minerals, herbs, I don't know, everything that we don't already know about. So it is, as always with Mother Earth, a symbiotic relationship. We need to connect because we need to develop our consciousness. As our consciousness develops, Gaia's consciousness develops, and vice versa. So we need to connect in order to heal the planet, but we also need to connect because the planet has information for us.
Yeah.
So it is a beautiful process. And you know, I think back to the time that I really connected with nature. I was going through a rewilding phase after having had many years in the thick of it in London. And I lived in the middle of nowhere in a microclimate of extreme weather. And I realized that I had to connect with nature to second guess what was coming, to keep myself safe, the animals safe, the property safe. And I had always loved being outside. I'd done sports all my life. And it occurred to me that it isn't enough to simply be outside and say, oh, that's a nice sunset, love the rainbow. But actually, if you're outside busy doing something else, like sport in my case, you're not connecting with nature.
No.
So my opportunity was through this reclusive period, which I call my rewilding years, where I absolutely had to connect because it was about survival.
Yeah.
And in that connection, again, it's a symbiotic relationship, because as I looked and observed, so it showed me more of itself.
Mm.
So I mean, just, you know, at an aesthetic level, I would see a rainbow and go, wow. And it was there for about 3 seconds. And I'd think, oh, that was just for me. I can't think of anyone else. You know, I lived in the middle of nowhere. There were no other people. That's just for me. And then I would get another one minutes later, and another and another. And I'd frequently get maybe 8 or 10 that would be there for very short periods of time. So that's what I mean by, as you observe, it observes you back and it gives you more of.
Exactly.
And it was the same with discovering the animals that lived on my property and realizing, you know, these, I had my animals and I had the odd other wild animal I knew of. And then I had a whole load I didn't know of. And wonderful stories about connections with wild animals that needed my help. And I seemed to be on the cat internet, and I had about 8 feral cats that came to me in the end. But actually, it makes you realize again, in talking about this relationship with nature, with Gaia, you cannot own it. You cannot, because it is so massive. Even with my 10 acres, I didn't know the half of what was on my 10 acres.
Yeah.
So it is a question of guardianship. It is guardianship.
It is.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
That's beautiful. And it's very true. When I started going into nature, that's when she called me. Mother Earth, Mother Nature called me. And it was like her healing, you know, walking on the ground, mooning with the trees, being at one with that beautiful, with her essence. Really, for me, that's when all the parts of my soul that I gave away started coming back to me. You know, it was her healing that really started my awakening journey. So I just, you know, tell everyone, I think it's the beginning, you know, as you say, rewilding, recalling in them soul parts. Beautiful.
It was rewilding my soul. That's what it was. Absolutely.
That's it. That's what it is. That's what she does. So absolutely beautiful. So Fiona, please tell us about your book, The Ultimate Relationship, The One You Have With Yourself.
Absolutely. And there it is.
Wonderful.
I mean, basically, this takes us back to the whole idea of taking responsibility for yourself and reclaiming your power. The most significant way that we change our world is by taking back our power. And that means starting with ourselves. We cannot affect the change we want with the world around us and be of maximum use to people unless we understand ourselves, because there are so many ways in which we trip ourselves up and we diminish our power. So for me, the book was 20 years in writing. Mm. So it was a whole series of insights, epiphanies, talks I'd given, podcasts, affirmations. It was just this box of stuff I'd carried around three or four different houses as I moved. And when I came to pack up and sell the last one, there was the box. And I thought, right, bonfire. And I thought, no, I can't put it on the bonfire without reading everything one last time. And when I read it, I thought, oh, shit, I can't put it on the bonfire until I've written a book, because there was so much in it that was profoundly life-changing for me, and I really felt compelled to share it with other people. So the book was the culmination of all of that stuff. And what was that stuff? Well, I have lived a life of perpetual motion. You know, it was just so frenetic all of the time that I didn't even have time to go to the toilet in the day. You know, it was that sort of ridiculous. I'd had businesses all my life. I'd been in London for 20, 25 years. Alongside that, I competed two sports at international level. And my spiritual journey was super important along that whole way as well, because it helped me from a practical perspective to have more of an overview on the shit that happened, which always, you know, it was a lot of stuff and challenge that was always happening. When you say to the universe, you know, bring it on. And yeah. I've always had this bring it on attitude. What you get is a lot of change. And that change comes through all manner and means, but often through difficult situations. Yes. So having that sort of spiritual perspective gave me the ability to see more of a context, to not be angry with people who I felt had done me a misjustice, but to try and understand where they came from, where I came from, how the situation arose, travel light. But also it was about how do I amplify my innate energy, my connection with the divine? How do I use a divine helping hand to get by with 20 years on 5 hours sleep and wake up refreshed and ready to go the next morning every day? How do I get more nutritional value out of my food, out of every mouthful I put in my mouth? How do I amplify the energy of that to do the sport that I did and the sheer physicality of my life? And also for the brain power, because in business, constant decision making, constantly needing to be focused, constantly needing to be there in the moment. So, and then how do you bend time? You know, how do you fit it all in? How do you make time fit the tasks? So my book is really anecdotes and stories, and it blends with sort of metaphysics in terms of my techniques for doing all of the above.
Wonderful.
So it's like a sort of quantum form of psychology, and a practical spirituality blended into the stories of my life.
Beautiful. That sounds really, really wonderful. Absolutely lovely. And, you know, many people will relate to that, definitely, you know, at this time.
But it also has quite a big theme of the divine feminine. Yeah. Now, I wouldn't have called it the divine feminine at the time, because I didn't understand what the divine feminine was.
Yes.
But I came into working in London and found myself in the financial sector, which was a complete anathema to me because I was maths phobic. I'd come out of business school with an MBA thinking I was the only graduate on the planet who couldn't read a balance sheet. And there I was in the financial world. It was like, what the F am I doing here? and it was horrifying because, I mean, I think like many women in my generation, or I subsequently found out there were many women like me who actually were not very numerate as far as maths went, who had a lack of confidence, who sort of had bought the social conditioning that maths and finance was a man's subject. And so I set about trying to understand it, because the financial world is terribly complicated. It's terribly male. It's terribly patronizing. It's full of jargon. And so in my quest to understand it myself, I realized that actually my mission was to be able to communicate the whole subject matter in plain English and in an empowering way, so that it changed people's lives and it helped create financial independence. But in finding out that there were, you know, in the 80s, so we're talking 83 onwards, there was this movement going on in London, which was the start of women's networking, professional women's networking, women in property, women in management, women in the city. It was all happening. And I was looking for a peer group. I came out of university, which had been a mixed male-female, 50-50 roughly, into the financial world where there were almost no women at all. Every meeting I went to, I was the only woman in the room. And I'm thinking, like, where are all the women? So I went looking for a female peer group by being involved in these networks. And I discovered that women like me lacked confidence with numeracy, et cetera, et cetera. So I made it my mission to work with women and to empower women to be financially independent, because that then means you have decisions and you can take control of your life. You can move out of a relationship that's detrimental if you have the financial means to do so.
Yes,
you can change your career. Bloody blah.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And that leads me on to the next to this question. We'll talk about the divine feminine in a minute, but why is it so crucial for women to be in positions of influence and leadership at this time?
Well,
freedom, autonomy.
Yeah, no. Yes. But it's a huge subject. So my take now would be, it's not about women being in positions of leadership. It's about the balance of the divine masculine and the divine feminine.
Exactly.
In everyone.
That's right.
But if I go back to my time in London and talk about women's leadership, because I was very involved in that, let me explain what I observed. So I was running my own business, which grew to be reasonably big in due course. And I was working with many other women who also ran their own businesses or who were very senior in the corporate world. And I got to see what women's leadership looked like. And then when I sold that business, I set up a video website, which was about interviewing. I mean, I interviewed in the first year or so before I moved on to something else and sort of ditched that, unfortunately, 100 or so women who were absolutely at the top of their game in the UK, both in their own businesses and in corporates. And that was all about understanding further what women bring to the party and how women's leadership is different to men. And what I learned was that it was very similar to my own style. And I didn't describe my style as feminine or anything. I just did what came naturally. But first and foremost, women don't consider power and money as their number one priority. So they come from a position of using their intuition, of following the opportunities that present themselves, of making their mission to make a difference to their staff and their customers or their clients, to engage everyone and create teamwork and cohesion. And so these are the things that actually define women's leadership style by and large. Mm. And I found that the ones in corporates who had risen to become chief executives of, you know, FT 100 listed companies, for instance, never set out saying, I want the top job.
Mm.
They took every opportunity that came to them. They went left, right, up, down, sideways, all over the place, learning in the process a huge amount about their organizations. And then when they were maybe two or three runs off the top job, they thought, well, maybe I'll go for it. Maybe I'll do it. So women's leadership is very different to the traditional male leadership style. And so I feel that that is more of what we want to see in our society and in business.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it needs to be across the board. So we need to incorporate the best aspects of divine masculine and divine feminine within ourselves, but also within the mix of the people making decisions. And actually, I wanted, if you're up for it, to talk about Lemuria. Completely go off piste and talk about Lemuria.
Can I just say something there about the divine feminine?
That's
really important, you know, but of course we have the wounded feminine, you know, and so many women, they become more like, you know, masculinized. They think they have to fight in battle, and it's ego. It's coming from the ego, the toxic side of that, right? And divine feminine is all about coming from the heart, from truth, from your, you know, from the truth, from your soul, you know, and when you come from that, that's what he means. So with everything you do, you can be in positions of power and leadership as long as you're doing it from the divine feminine's way. You know, that's going to propagate, and everything in this world, anything in this energy now that does not, you know, propagate love, does not come from love, is going to dissolve.
That's right. Absolutely. But that then goes back for all of us, men and women, because you have the wounded masculine as well.
Of course.
Understanding ourselves. It goes back to what I've written in the book, understanding what is really us, what is not really us. Mm. We take on board all of the patterning of our society, of our parents, of our peer group, of our education. And that patterning it's actually not even patterning, it's programming. Mm. You know, that programming then determines how we think and how we behave. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's been happening in this pressure pot of the madness of our world now is to say, what is me? Is that who I really am? Because until you start to unpeel all of those layers, you cannot replace those narratives that you have about yourself and people around you and the world you live in with things that are more useful and things that are more benevolent. So actually, for all of us, men, women, and everyone, we have to start to understand to peel back the layers and to come back to a point where we can see what's ego, what isn't ego, and where the heart is. So actually, I think it's across the board, although, you know, we're women, we would be very in tune with the whole sort of stuff that we carry as in our biology and in our being. But going back to Lemuria, I've been following for years, well, from 35 years from the start, the information that has been given by a channeled source called Kryon. I don't know if you've come across the Kryon information.
No, but they say that Lemuria was of the divine feminine.
Yes, yes. So the information that was given by the Kryon entourage about Lemuria is really breathtaking. And it just completely resonates. And it's on their websites, kryon.com. And it's in a book that was written by Monica Murani, which is called The Women of Lemuria. Yeah. But basically, they had a society that was a starting society in terms of the organization of people and activities. They also worked with the Pleiadian mothers. So they had this incredible wisdom and they had the seeding of their divinity at that time. This was about, I think, 200,000 years ago or whatever. And Lemuria was this continent, a small continent. And what's left of it now are the Hawaiian Islands. So the Hawaiian Islands that stick out at the top, it was all part of one continent, apparently, at the start. But they had organized their society. So the women were effectively the wise ones and the leaders. They were sort of in charge. But it wasn't something that was based on power. It was just this innate knowing of what women were good at and what men were good at. Yeah. So the women epitomize the divine feminine in terms of such strong connection with their intuition. They would actually, the men would get up every morning at about 5 o'clock to go fishing to get the food for the day, but they would first consult with the women who would tune in and say where they should fish, where they will find fish today. So they revered the women for their knowledge to guide them to where they should go fish, right?
Yes, intuition.
Yes. And the women would then educate the children and do the things that women do. And they would have their wise women groups and they would birth in a birthing pool and they would sing while new life came into the world and so on. But the men looked after the women. They did what they were good at. When they brought the catch of fish in, they would cook it and prepare the food. They did the whole process. So that was the division of labor based on common sense.
Exactly.
Men are good at this. Women are good at
roles.
That.
It's the roles that we were born into, which we are good at.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so because the women were the shamans, they had this connection with the divine and with their intuition. They were the ones that made the decisions because they were the ones that could pull this information forth, that could tune in to the people and the land and the weather and everything else. And so they were the ones to naturally be the leaders of their society. It's a common sense.
It is. It is. And, you know, this is why, you know, and back then, even in the old goddess religion, well, not nature worship religions. I'm not saying religion, you know, men revered the women, but they made statues of the big bellies. And it was like astonishing that women gave birth and had the menstrual times in time with the moon. And, you know, and there were no warfare. They lived in peace. Archaeologists have found no warfare, no institutions, and it's beautiful because now we've been so far that way. And now we've been so far into the male dominance, the patriarchal. But basically, this is why we need to raise the women now. And it's not going to be matriarchal or patriarchal. It's going to be unity. The women are not going to be above the men. You know, the world, and I said this in my other videos, has been flying on one wing, right? We need both wings to bring it into balance. You know, this is what it is. It's beautiful.
Divide and rule hasn't really worked that well, has it?
No, it hasn't.
So, yeah, we need to bring people together. We need to bring creativity to the fore. We need to use compassion as the driver. And so all of these are attributes of the divine feminine. And yes, of course, that means that we need to bring this into our roles of leadership and to form the new direction that we go in from here. Yeah. Mm.
And what does you know, what does it mean to be divine feminine? What does it mean? There are so many.
It means all of the above, everything that we've been talking about. It means, it's sort of like if you embrace those aspects of your being. So the compassion, the heartfelt motivations, the unity consciousness idea of bringing people and ideas together. That is magnetism. You don't have to go out and force things to happen. You gravitate to you what you need to manifest. That is divine feminine. That is not weakness to be feminine and not out on sort of in the cut and thrust, because the power of that is that you draw to you. Mm. So I feel that that's what it is. You know, when I started out, I had sort of seen in my own life as role models in my family that the feminine was weak. And I said, I never want to be like that.
Exactly.
Never.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I went out into the world and I pushed ahead and did my sport and I set up, you know, businesses all my life. And actually, in that process, I was using a lot of male energy. Because that was my knee-jerk reaction. And I had to learn through observation, as I've described, through working with women, and through noticing my innate patterns, actually, that I was probably battling with, about, you know, with the cut and thrust. So the innate intuitive and everything, and then having a lot of battles internally to with the cut and thrust side, pushing ahead, being achievement orientated. And so it took me a long time. Mm-hmm. Balance that in myself.
That's
so
right.
I could be what the term for this is, sort of more androgynous, that you have the capacity to straddle both energies and do the masculine things and work out of the masculine when you need to, but at the same time to espouse the feminine.
That is so absolutely true. And also, this is what we're here to. We were born in, you know, in the oneness. We come into this world of duality to learn about the masculine and feminine and the light and the dark and everything, to bring that wholeness into us, don't we? And it's very important. The divine feminine is not all unicorns and love. It's the dark goddess. It's the dark goddess that we've all been, you know, closed from expressing, closed from speaking our truth about, closed, you know, no one, you know, now is the time to balance the dark goddess with the white goddess. Yeah. And that is just about going in and embracing that darkness, delving into your shadows, bringing it up to the light, embracing it all, letting it go, because, you know, it's part of who we are. And it thrusts us on. You know, anger is sometimes important because we need to say no to the things that do not serve us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, no, that's absolutely spot on. And I'll just describe from my own personal experience some of that. We have to let go, because we put onto ourselves all of these layers one way and another, whether we know it or not. And then we become identified with our persona. And we become possessive of the things we have in life, and money and possessions and so on. Now, I had several points that I realized life wasn't serving me. Yeah, you're so right about life not serving you, getting to the point where life doesn't serve you. And that has certainly been my experience, in that several times over, I've become a slave to my dream. And I've decided in that moment that I've needed to make a massive transition, a complete radical change, probably a very extreme change. So the first one was coming out of the madness of London and the excitement of that whole sort of environment, building businesses and so on. And over a 10-year period, gradually becoming a recluse in the middle of nowhere and semi-feral, really. That was amazing. And that was the point I described before about the connection to nature and other things. And then I became a slave of that dream as well. And 2 years ago, was feeling completely just burned out again and needing to make a big change. So I sold up on the basis I needed to reinvent myself again. And it was best, I would find that most interesting and easiest to do in a completely different country. But then the madness of our times precluded me from traveling without hassle because I didn't do any of the diktats.
Yes.
So I had to find another way of being, biding my time, understanding the lay of the land. And so I chose to live on wheels. So I've been living on wheels now for 2 years.
Brilliant.
But in that process of selling up this farm I had and the beautiful possessions I'd carted around from house to house over many years, and art and glass and all my farm stuff. And then there was my furry family, the horses and the cats. I actually decided I had to shed absolutely everything.
Wow.
So I went through this process. Yeah, so actually, I need to backtrack just one thing I forgot to say. Coming out of the city, the challenge with that was that my business was my persona. It had my name on it, and my whole everything, who I am, my personality, was stamped on that business. Mm-hmm. And there was a big sort of pull to separate out and realize it was it and I was I. Mm-hmm. So, okay, fast forward to then now selling up the farm and offloading everything that was not going to fit into an RV. And actually, I found once I got over the sort of it, and sold or gave away everything, it was so liberating. It was just so liberating because it was the realization that none of that stuff defines you. None of that stuff is important, you know, and you spend so much time and energy looking after possessions or hoiking them from one house to another and they don't really fit, but, you know, they're too lovely and they were too expensive to sort of part with. So when you say it's not going to happen if it's all got to fit into 10 meters by, you know, 3 meters, then that's really sobering. And it was utterly liberating. But then that gave rise to a dark night of the soul. And okay, who am I? And what am I going to do? And where am I going to do it? And what comes next? And it's no good for somebody like me that has massive energy and creative juices. And if they don't flow, then that implodes. And that gave rise to a real dark night of the soul. Mm. But then that also gave rise, maybe a bit like yours, to the inspiration to do the next project.
Yes.
And it brought together all sorts of pieces that had been there in the background for a long time.
Wonderful. And please tell us about your new project, the Earth Collective. And, you know, just tell us all about it. Yeah.
Well, okay. So I had been rewilding in Wales and gradually getting off grid, well, as best I could. I had my own water. I had my own, I had a biomass stove. I had wood burning stoves. I had my own sewerage disposal. The only thing I didn't have was power. But it's very difficult with a 15th century property to be completely energy efficient, to be completely insulated. I mean, you can't. But it had focused my mind on how do you live in a sustainable way and an affordable way?
Yeah.
You know, how do you not pay bills, but have something that really works and sustains itself? So I'd been doing a lot of research over the years into all manner of things related to that and looked at different concepts. There was one concept called the passive house, HAUS, which is an ultra energy efficient way of building. It's a style of building, which is a German principle where you insulate everything.
Germans are the best.
Yeah, they're techies, so good. Yeah. Where you insulate everything so that there's no air that goes from the inside to the out. There can be no loss of heat. But you have a mechanical air ventilation system, so you have fresh air in the property the whole time. You use solar, and, you know, you don't require any other form of heating, mostly because you have the solar gain that comes in and you're not losing any heat and you have fresh air. Mm-hmm. So I really like that. Then I thought a few years later, I came across the Earthship concept. Think Hobbit House, think partially buried, coming out of the ground. And I thought, oh no, that's it, that's it. So I was researching that type of living, because then you have the warmth from the earth behind you, you have the warmth from the sun coming in through the glass at the front. So again, you have passive heat without any energy, and you grow your own food within the conservatory on the front, which is like a glass conservatory, and you have your own water harvesting and your own water purification and your own energy and so on. So I thought that was it. And then when I sold up, so several years down the line again, I thought, well, what else is there now? And I came across an iteration of Earthship, which was built for cold climates in particular. And so I've sort of gone more along those lines. So my concept is to create a community of maybe 7 homes and a community building for education, for courses, for interns, for woofers, guest accommodation and so on, which is completely self-sufficient in terms of food, in terms of energy, in terms of everything, no grid, no facilities required from the outside world, but also that uses the facets of sacred geometry and biogeometry to maximize the balanced energy and the power of the spaces. So what's become obvious to me over many years is that we live in boxes. We live in rooms with right angles everywhere. We live in a world where everything is being poisoned. Our water, our air, our food. You have the poison from pharma. So you have the great poisoning that's been going on. You have buildings that are not harmonic to our being. And the overall effect of that is that it is increasingly difficult to live in what I call a state of homeostasis. Yes. So what I define that as is that we are in a state where we can take absolutely for granted good health, good energy. And we just get on and do what we're meant to do in life.
It's mind, body, soul alignment, isn't it? It's alignment, yeah.
But it's not just that. It's the environment, because we don't want the environment working against us, either in terms of food or in terms of energy, the geopathic stress, so the energy lines in the ground either work
EMFs.
So to create buildings that are harmonious in all of those facets, so they're curvilinear, there's no edges, that they are in the right power points in the ground on the site, which will be up to about 40 acres, that they are harmonic between the earth and the sky and the cosmos, that they are the right energy for the individuals, the specific individuals that will live in those buildings. And then you have the whole aspect of how do you live together in a community? So the given for me is that people must be on the same page. People must be like-minded. People must be aware. They must be working on themselves, soul tribe. So they must be working on themselves as a never-ending journey of learning and expansion. But once you have that as a given, then what are the ways at a practical level that you work together in community to avoid conflict and to harmonize those relationships? So that's what my project is about. And I don't believe it's been done before quite in the way I'm envisaging. So I have another blank piece of paper, and I have started with the first question, what? And actually, this project finally came to me in a coherent form exactly a year ago. I was still in the UK in my dark night of the soul saying, what am I meant to do now? Help me, give me some information, you know, trying to pull in all the inspiration and connection that I could. And finally, it came together in a sort of epiphany. And I was given the name, the Earth Collective, for it.
Beautiful.
And from there, it was like, well, okay, what next? You know, like, well, where? What country? I mean, with who? How? So I had to start from this absolute baseline of nothingness. And now a year later, I decided, okay, it's going to be in Ireland. There are some really important reasons, which I can tell you if you're interested, why Ireland is so special. But also I've now gathered a number of people that are seriously interested in doing it with me. I've gathered a huge network of people. I've been gathering information for having the right team of eco-architects, natural builders, and all of the participants. And I don't know, I can only ever see one step ahead. I'm not a builder. I'm not an architect. I am having to just gain the information and the contacts so that it starts to put itself together and can circumnavigate the difficulties which everyone tells me are there in terms of planning and making it happen in that sense. But that's not my reality. My reality is it's done. Yes. And there has to be a way. So I hear what everyone else says, but it's not my reality. Yeah. So that's sort of in a nutshell.
Wow. Absolutely wonderful. Really, really. It's just fascinating. It's fascinating to hear. And I wish you all, I'm sending you all divine love light energy for your Earth Collective. And I'm sure, Fiona, that you're really going to get it going. I really, really know that. So thank you for all of your insights that you've given us today. And I just want to say thank you for being on the Great Awakening Show.
Thank you very much, Joanne.
Yes, that was absolutely wonderful. And wow, I think, you know, it was just...